Welcome to the Denver Broncos podcast, week one edition. With you today, we have myself, Ben Swanson of DenverBroncos.com, and also our analyst for the website, Andrew Mason, who has a new book coming out, Tales from the Denver Broncos Sideline. With the preseason behind us, we're looking forward to week one against the Indianapolis Colts at home this Sunday. The preseason, as we all know, is a time for learning about the team, both for the team finding out their depth and also for fans to learn a little bit about the starters and a little bit about the people behind them. Who stood out to you during these four games? For me, it was a lot of Emmanuel Sanders against Houston and, you know, just a lot of good defensive play.
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned Sanders. That's a perfect guy to bring up, even though he missed a couple of weeks of practice with the quadriceps injury, and he wasn't targeted in the other preseason game he played, against Seattle. You saw in the Houston game what sort of element he's going to bring to the offense, and that's that kind of outside speed that hasn't necessarily been there. I mean, he's being asked to replace Eric Decker in this offense, but it's not an apples for apples trade. They're two guys with different skill sets. And I think Sanders' skill set is something that was really lacking in the offense on the outside before. Being able to stretch the field a little more, I think, is going to open it, going to make it wide open. Cody Latimer, another young receiver. Obviously, he's not starting like Emmanuel Sanders is, but he had an impressive preseason. Most of his work, of course, came with Brock Osweiler when he was with the twos. But we saw what he could do on the go route against San Francisco. How he can get open going up the sideline. We saw against Dallas what he can do on the short stuff when he takes the drag route and gets away from two defenders and turns it into a 57-yard gain. And, that's perfect. That's exactly what they want from him, a guy who can beat you short, beat you long. And, we'll see what kind of use he gets, especially early in the season. And we're going to obviously touch on Wes Welker, later in the podcast. But, a guy like Cody Latimer is probably going to have some more opportunities to build on that preseason because the Broncos are without one of their top three wide receivers. So the fact that his progress was so palpable over the course of the summer, I think, real positive. And then to go to the defense, we don't want to ignore that. Marvin Austin, obviously not on a lot of radar screens going into training camp. I mean, he jumped out to me at OTAs, but, as Broncos coach Sean Fox says, that's just working underwear. You really can't get a lot from that. But you get to preseason, you put on the pads, and he had it. Very quick off the snap, explosive, had a variety of moves, did a good job consistently breaking down the pocket and also being stout against the run. And really, one of the reasons why they had such a tough cut with Kevin Vickerson this past week is because of Marvin Austin's emergence. This is the first time in his career he's ever been healthy. He looked like the guy that a lot of people thought was going to be a first-round pick coming out of North Carolina back in 2011 when the Giants picked him. He got hurt that first training camp with the Giants. He'd never been healthy as a pro until right now, and you're seeing the results. And so that's one of the reasons why he's the guy that jumped out to me on defense.
Speaking of healthy, we, without Monte Ball, who had some unfortunate case of appendicitis at a rough time heading into the preseason, but we did get to see a lot of looks from the running backs, C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman, and then the two rookies in Jawan Thompson and Capri Bibbs. Each had their own different styles. For the rookies, they both were retained, Capri Bibbs on the practice squad and Jawan on the active roster. Who impressed you the most there?
Well, you mentioned Jawan Thompson. I think relative to expectation going into the summer, he stood out. But part of the reason why maybe expectations didn't match up with performance, why he outplayed them, was because at Duke he was part of a platoon. Now, that he learned a complicated offense at Duke, which helped him well in Denver. But, they're shuffling two, three running backs most of the time that he was there. And that really didn't give him a chance to show what we end up learning about him here at training camp. The thing I like about Jawan Thompson is there's no holes in his game. I mean, you want him to block, he's a capable blocker. You want him to catch passes out of the backfield, he can do that. And He made a nice play in the open field against San Francisco to shed a tackler in the right flat. If you want him to do some power running, he can do that. We saw him run through and over guys throughout the preseason. And the special teams work, you know, he's proficient at that as well, which is really valuable. If you're going to stick on the roster as a number four running back, you've got to be able to contribute on special teams. And he can do all that. And then, you know, and then on top of everything else, this is the guy who played defense for a game at Duke. He played linebacker when they played Virginia Tech last year. You know, so that's the sort of football player, sort of versatile football player you have in Juwan Thompson. You know, maybe he's not a guy that you're looking at as a starter down the line, but, you know, that backup, those backup running backs have to be able to do a multitude of tasks, and that's where Juwan Thompson succeeds, and I think that's what separated him from Capri Bibbs, was just his versatility. But Bibbs, we saw, could be explosive, particularly in the red zone. He had a couple of touchdowns against Dallas. And so the fact that Broncos were able to get him to the practice squad, I think, was pretty good for them as far as, you know, having a good young stable of running backs and being deep there. Of course, what's interesting is, you know, because Monte Ball didn't start last year, he's at the head of the class, but he hasn't made a regular season start. So it's a very inexperienced quintet of running backs, but it's young, so also a very fresh collection of running backs.
Speaking about the other rookies, we saw Bradley Roby really make some solid steps. He had to step up with Kayvon Webster's injury, so he made some starts on the first team there, and he did pretty well. In the Houston game, he defended Andre Johnson and held his own. And for another rookie, you have Isaiah Burse, a wide receiver who does a lot of work on special teams as a returner. And with Wes Welker out, he's going to see probably a good bit of time there, would you say?
I'd say so, but I'd say he's going to get a jersey. I'm not sure he's necessarily going to get a lot of playing time at wide receiver because you've got other options. We haven't mentioned Andre Caldwell, and he's the guy who actually filled in for Wes Welker more often than not. When Welker was hurt last year, he had a second concussion. He missed 3.5 games. Caldwell was the biggest direct beneficiary in terms of playing time. And you also have Jacob Tamu, who can bounce into the slot. I mean, he's a guy who was a wide receiver at various points in his career before he got to the NFL. So, you know, he has that ability as well. I think it's going to take a big chain reaction for Burse to get in, as a wide receiver in the games. I mean, I think it'll take another injury or two, but, you know, on return, certainly, I think he's going to have an impact. We saw against Dallas, you know, it seemed like his confidence really shot up in the second half on returns, and also he made some plays on offense as well. I think that helped him. But, you know, in the second half, more decisive. He was catching the ball better. One thing that I think plagued him during the preseason was, you know, he wasn't making the right decisions at times. You know, he'd call for a fair catch when he didn't necessarily need to, or he wouldn't take a fair catch when he had guys bearing down on him. And toward the end of that Dallas game, that went away, and you saw what kind of explosion he has. So on returns, I think he brings something dynamic. As I think it's going to take some time for him to contribute on offense, but, you know, I think they were expecting that. This is a year for him to hopefully, you know, sit back on the second and third tier of the depth chart, depending on how many receivers there are, learn the offense, and then maybe you look at Isaiah Burse next year as a guy who can compete for some time in the slot. But with Caldwell, I didn't even mention Emmanuel Sanders, who can go inside of the slot as well with Wes Welker down. So they've got options, and I don't think you'll see Burse do much on offense.
Shifting gears here, going from what's behind us to what's ahead, we look forward to the Colts game coming up. Now, last year, it was a bit of a tough game. It was a 39-33 loss for the Broncos. But this year, there's a lot of changes. We've got three new players, key players on the defense, with Aqib Talib, DeMarcus Ware, TJ Ward. But the defense wasn't really the problem in that game so much. There were some turnovers, and they just couldn't get it done. What are you looking for differently in this game?
Well, I mean, it wasn't a great game for the defense. It was kind of reflective of a defense that was perpetually in transition. You know, that was the game they got Von Miller back from a six-game suspension, but didn't really help the defense directly as much as a lot of people thought he would going into that game. But yeah, you mentioned the turnovers, and turnovers were a function of pressure. and the pressure came from two sources. It came from the secondary. The cornerbacks in particular were playing a very aggressive press man coverage on the Broncos receivers, and really that kept the offense from getting its timing right until you had a pass interference penalty late in the third quarter on Cassius Vaughn, and that kind of forced the Colts to play back a little bit. They got less aggressive in coverage, and all of a sudden the passing game started to click. But the other key thing was pressure from the front seven, in particular from Robert Mathis, who was working at outside linebacker and had two sacks and had the forced fumble that led to the safety in the second quarter. And Mathis isn't going to be out there. And, you know, he's serving a four-game suspension. You know, a lot of the talk this week has been about Wes Welker's suspension for obvious reasons. But I think the Mathis suspension is going to have more of a profound impact on this game. I think you look at the Broncos' depth at receiver that we've alluded to, and there's ways to replicate the production they got from Wes Welker and keep the offense going with minimal disruption. But Colts pass rush, it's not the same. You've got Bjorn Werner is a second-year guy. He was a first-round pick out of Florida State last year, and he's coming along. But he's had some fits and starts to this point. And then Eric Walden's gonna have to play a lot, and he hasn't really been what they expected when they signed him as a free agent. So, you know, those two suspensions, the Colts pass rush is more affected by its suspension than the Broncos receiving core is. And without Robert Mathis, I don't see where the pressure is going to come from that really disrupted Peyton Manning. And also last year, and also don't forget, that was a game where the Broncos had to shuffle their offensive line. They were already without Ryan Clady, who had the Lisfranc injury and was out for the year at that point. But they also played without Orlando Franklin. He was hurt the week before, so they had to move Luis Vazquez, and they had to put Chris Cooper in, Cooper, who retired this offseason. And, you know, Cooper was, you know, that was the only game he started last year. You know, he battled the leg problems since the, you know, horrific injury he had on January 1st, 2012, and really wasn't the same after that. And the Colts also exploited that in addition to getting pressure from Robert Mathis. So now the Broncos have a healthy offensive line. They don't have to face the Colts' top pass rusher. So I think things are going to go much more smoothly for the Broncos' offense Sunday.
With the Welker suspension, is there anyone in particular you have your eyes on to step up? You have Sanders, you have Caldwell. Is there any one guy you think is just going to explode in this game?
Well, I think Sanders has the capability to explode, whether he's playing inside in the slot at times or working from the outside. I think he's the guy that I think you look for to have a big game. And obviously, you know, we don't mention Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas because, you know, it's expected they're going to play well. They're established. They're Pro Bowlers. They're known commodities. It's not news when they have, you know, when they have a couple of touchdowns or they have 100 yards, but you know, Emmanuel Sanders, the 128-yard preseason game he had against Houston, that was the first 100-yard game of his NFL career. Never broken into three digits in a single game.
Too shabby in a one half of a preseason game.
Yeah, it was impressive, and almost all of it happened in the last 2 minutes of the first half because he had the two big plays. So I think he's the guy who's really going to step up, and then you know. There's going to be other guys like John Fox said on Wednesday. It's going to, you know, you're going to see a variety of guys stepping in and filling that role. So like I said, I think you'll see Jacob Tammy working in the slot. I think you'll see Andre Caldwell out there more, and you may even see Cody Latimer get some snaps on the outside and on plays where you move Sanders inside. There's a lot of flexibility among the receivers. A lot of guys can line up in many different spots. And I think that's really going to help the Broncos through these next 4 weeks without the man they call the slot machine.
There is certainly no shortage of weapons for this Broncos offense, I think we can agree on. Moving towards the Colts here, we have, you know, they're led by their passing offense. Luck is a very smart and also mobile quarterback. He's a guy who's going to be trying to look off receivers and get the defense jumping one way to go the other way. And then they added some receivers this offseason. You got Reggie Wayne, you got Hakeem Nicks, and then also adding towards, you know, Hilton, who was there last year as well. How do you attack a guy like Andrew Luck with this defense that's remodeled?
Well, first of all, you start off by not getting suckered in by him. He's very good at getting safeties and linebackers out of position just with a look one way, and then he throws in the other direction or he takes off in the other direction. Terrence Knight made a great point yesterday that tackling luck is like trying to tackle a running back or a tight end. He's that big, he's that strong, and causes that many problems. When he's in the open field, that's something you've really got to take into account. Now, it's going to be a little bit tougher for him because the Colts offensive line is in a little bit of I wouldn't say panic mode, but they're having to do a lot of shuffling. They lost Donald Thomas in the preseason. He's out for the season. Their center, Khalid Holmes, he's probably not going to play, which is going to put A.Q. Shipley, who they just got from Baltimore, into the starting lineup. And really, that's never an ideal situation to have to change your center on the fly and have him, start just a few days after signing. So I think you're going to see Terrence Knighton and the other Broncos interior rushers try to exploit that. Wouldn't surprise me if you see a lot of blitzes up the A-gap, if you see them sending Brandon Marshall or even T.J. Ward, up the middle to try to exploit some of the confusion you might have in the interior offensive line because you've had so many injuries there for the Colts. So Luck presents a lot of challenges, but at the same time, I think this is going to be a pretty challenging game for him as far as trying to get the offensive line on the same page and with the pressure that the Broncos can get inside and outside. I think Denver's pretty well positioned to do a better job containing Andrew Luck than they did last year.
One part of Indianapolis's offense that doesn't do so well was their rushing game. You got Trent Richardson, who struggled after the trade last year, famously struggled, and this year he's going to be trying to get back on track, hopefully for them, but he's going against a rush defense that last year was seventh in the league, and then they add, you got Von Miller back. Hopefully he'll be comfortable coming back like he did last year, but it's not going to be easy against this defense for him, I think.
Yeah, and obviously they're down Danny Trevathan, who's going to be out at least through week three because of his leg injury. But we've seen Brandon Marshall step in and do a pretty good job, particularly against the run. If you go back and watch the 49er preseason game, you see he's filling every hole. He's making every tackle. The jury's still out about what Brandon Marshall is in pass coverage, and I think that's going to take some time to judge, but we can already see he's a pretty stout run defender, and then of course when you've got those guys on the inside that are occupying blockers, Terrence Knight and Sylvester Williams, and we touched on Marvin Austin, who had an excellent camp, and Mitch Unrein has also done pretty well. When you have those guys able to take care of the blockers on the inside, and you can free the linebackers up to make stops, it just makes the whole thing flow. So the Colts' running game struggled last year, and if Denver's run defense does what it did in the preseason, it's going to be a tough task for them to get back on track this week.
The game again is at 6:30 Mountain Time. Looks like it'll be a pretty good game if last year's was any indication, so be sure to tune in for that one, or hop on your bike, or hop in your car, or hop on the train and get over to Sports Authority Field at Mile High for it. While we're focused on NFL football, our scouting department is always focused on the upcoming draft that's months and months away. But we're almost a couple weeks into college football season. Mace, it sounds like you've got your eyes on a few smaller school guys. Who are you focused on after week one?
Yeah, it's at this time of year, I actually love the interconference matchups, especially when you have FCS schools taking on FBS schools. I mean, a lot of them are blowouts, but it's a good time to really get a look at some guys against a higher level of competition. Some of these guys won't see this level of competition unless they get into the All-Star games like the East-West Shrine Game or the Senior Bowl. So that's what I was looking at last week, and a couple of guys caught my eye. One is a guy named David Johnson. He's a running back from Northern Iowa. Didn't really have a great game on the ground, but he had over 200 yards on five catches, including one just
Beautiful catch and run play where he got out in front of he got out in front of the linebacker, got two steps on him, caught the ball in stride, and just outran the entire Iowa defense to the end zone. And you know, the nice clean pass, catches of the pass that he had, and the speed he used to break away, it actually reminded me of a play that C.J. Anderson made a couple of years ago for Cal against Ohio State, just having that kind of explosion in the open field to outrun a pretty fast secondary. So he's a guy that I think got on some radars. He looks like a mid-round guy right now. Another mid-round guy, it's a small school guy, this guy named Jaquiski Tartt. He's out of Samford University in Alabama. He's a safety. They played TCU out of the Big 12 this weekend. It was a bad day for Samford. They lost by 34 points. But Tartt, you know, was everywhere. 11 tackles, actually missed a couple. But the missed tackles, literally, he's coming from all the way across the field almost to try to make the play. You know, it's not a play that he has any business even trying to make. But just that showed me his range, his overall athleticism. He's going to get another chance in late November when Samford plays at Auburn. I think that'll be an even better opportunity for him to showcase his wares. He's on what they call the Senior Bowl watch list. The former GM of the Browns, Phil Savage, runs the Senior Bowl now. And at the start of the season, comes up with a list. You can go to seniorbowl.com and check it out. And it gives you about 300 players to watch as you're taking in all the football games this year. And Tartt, he's a guy, you know, if he has some more games like that, if he plays well against Auburn, he looks like a late-round guy, third-day guy right now. Might even be able to play his way up into the top of the third day or the second day with more games like that.
Speaking of these smaller schools, this past first weekend we had the Appalachian State and Michigan, the first time they've been playing since, you know, the miraculous upset, I think it was back in 2007, I think so. And I was reading a story about that, a great piece on SI.com, an oral history, and they're talking about the speed that team had. Now, me coming from Charlotte, we'd known about Appalachian State. Mm-hmm. They were championship teams, and you know, FCS, that's different. They're not going to be as good as the bowl subdivision. But we had known that, you know, Armani Edwards, a great player. And they just stocked up on these smaller but very, very fast players, and they can make an impact. Unfortunately, Armani Edwards hasn't really done that in the NFL, but he did make it to the next level, which is always interesting to see.
Yeah, he was actually a third-round pick of the Panthers in 2010, and they tried to convert him into a receiver and punt returner. And what the Armani Edwards experience shows is that teams do try that pretty often to convert athletic quarterbacks to receivers or running backs at times, but it's a gambit that doesn't often work. But I mean, yeah, Armani Edwards, Dexter Jackson was a guy. He didn't work out in the NFL, but he was another high draft pick, and he had a lot of speed. And I think that game really kind of opened doors to the FBS level, and I think also opened some, and then by extension, some NFL doors to some smaller, faster guys who I think those big schools kind of ignored for a long time. But when you saw that game, you saw all the speed that App State had that day, I think it was a real eye opener, because that was not a bad Michigan team. That was a very good Michigan team that had a lot of NFL guys that App State took out. And it's actually been a little bit more difficult, I think, for the App States of the world to get those speed guys. And now, actually, App State is FBS themselves. They've made the transition moving up, and a little bit of a rough go this past Saturday for them against when they went back to Michigan. But you know, they don't seem to have as many pro prospects as they did a couple of years ago. But I think they'll find their footing. And as you, I mean, I lived in Charlotte. You lived in Charlotte. We know how big App State is in that part of North Carolina. So I think we'll see some NFL players out of there soon.
Moving on, going a little bit back towards this matchup, the Colts and the Broncos have a bit of a history together. Now, Peyton Manning, of course, has been playing for so long. He's beaten every NFL team except one, and that's Indianapolis.
Well, it's a bit of history. The only quarterback to beat all 32 teams is Brett Favre. And just think of the moving parts it takes. You've got to have a long career. You got to have a successful career, but you've also got to change teams in order to pull that off. Manning actually became the first quarterback to beat 31 teams In 07, he accomplished that when the Panthers, or when the Colts beat the Panthers. That was team number 31. Later that same afternoon, Tom Brady became the second quarterback to beat 31 teams when New England beat Washington. And then the next week, Brett Favre became the third quarterback to beat 31 teams. He was quarterback in Green Bay. They beat Kansas City that day. Favre made it 32 because he, of course, left for the Jets and then the Vikings, and the Vikings beat the Packers in 09. And that's when, you know, Manning now has the opportunity to join him. And I think it was interesting. I went back and looked at some great quarterbacks that had changed teams, even like in the 2018 era, the 30-team era. And, you know, like Joe Montana, for instance, you know, he never beat Miami in the regular season, even though he beat him in the Super Bowl. So, you know, you can count that or you cannot count that. But you know, it's something that it's a rare accomplishment, and Manning has the chance to do that on Sunday. And I think it's just another notch for him. I mean, just think of all the things he's checking off on his resume that's unlike any other at this point. And now he's going to have something that only Brett Favre has. And unless Tom Brady moves on from New England, he's not going to have that on his resume either. So,
well, like you said this past week, he's planning on playing until he sucks, which means he could be going for a long time. And who knows if he ever switches team. It's hard to predict that. And there's another Bronco who has made some history against the Colts, and that's our own John Elway.
Yes, in one of my assignments, I also write content for Sports Exchange, one of the little notes that I put in every week is, what's the most memorable game between the two teams in the history of the series? And the one I pointed out was a game late season, December 1983. John Elway's first comeback was against the Colts, then in Baltimore. That was actually their last season in Baltimore before they moved to Indianapolis. And the Broncos were down 19-0 in the fourth quarter. And three touchdowns later, you know, Elway brings them back for a 21-19 win that actually ended up being the difference for them in getting back to the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. That's where it all began for Elway. And, you know, so the Broncos have had some success against the Colts. Haven't had a lot of it recently. They haven't beaten the Colts since week 17 of the 2004 season, and that was a game where the Broncos played their starters and the Colts did not. They pulled them after one possession because they'd already clinched their playoff spot and the Broncos were trying to get in. And Denver, by winning that game, moved on to the playoffs, where they saw the Colts in Indianapolis a week later, and the result was a pretty devastating loss, 49-24. So it will, you know, that nearly a decade of hurt against these guys. And I think, you know, some of the guys allude to that in the locker room this week, how long the Colts have had this hex over the Broncos. It'd be nice to kind of to reverse that on Sunday.
Our own Mace, Andrew Mason here, is a bit of a Broncos encyclopedia. And you might be able to find his work now on your local bookshelf. He's got his new book, Tales from the Denver Broncos Sideline. And it's just full of all the history you could possibly want of the Denver Broncos. Is there anything that stands out? Like, how much work did went into this book? How many days, hours?
Well, it was a fair amount of research. Fortunately, in covering the Broncos for all but 2 years since 2002, I've got a lot of background research, and I've kept a lot of interviews and a lot of files and all that. So I was able to dive back into that, but I wanted to kind of tell the story as it happened, so that meant really going back into a lot of newspapers and a lot of magazines and doing some research to kind of get a focus on how the story was told and, you know, how it was perceived as it was happening and get the details of it right. So it was really, really fascinating to kind of go back and sift through the team history. The book is basically a series of short vignettes. It's kind of fitting in with tales, you know. It's not, you know, kind of like short stories here and there. It's part of a series of by Skyhorse Publishing it's going to cover all NFL teams. They've done most of them by now. The Broncos were one of the last ones for them to do. And it's, you know, I talk about the Elway comeback against Baltimore in there, and obviously some of his more famous comebacks, like against the Browns in the playoffs in January 87, the drive two from the Oilers playoff game in January of 92, It was just a lot of fun to kind of go back and review the history. And I found myself, as I was researching, learning stuff that I didn't know about the team history. I've got a little part of it. One story in there is actually, it leads into the 1977 season, but it kind of talks about how there was a lot of discord at the end of the 1976 season. Really, you could even call it a mutiny that ended up forcing John Ralston, the coaching GM at the time, out and paved the way for Red Miller and the first Super Bowl season of 77. And really, that was kind of the demarcation point in changing the Bronco franchise. So it's fun to kind of look back and see all the turning points that happened. And I think we've even got a little bit of perspective on some recent times. You know, there's a turning point I look back on in 2010 when this team went 4-12. In particular, when they went to London, and that was the weekend of the videotaping scandal when that actually transpired, and they lost to a Niner team that at the time was the worst in the league. And but that was also the bottoming out, and from that point they began rebuilding. They hired Elway a couple months later, hired John Fox, and look where the team is today. You know, the Broncos history is replete with those kinds of turning points, and you can go read all about them in Tales from the Denver Broncos Sideline. And you can get it in local bookstores if you're in the Colorado, Barnes and Noble, Tattered Cover, etc. But it's available throughout the country and beyond. There's on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. There's a Kindle edition. There's a Nook edition. There's an iBook edition. So there's plenty of ways for you to read it and learn a little about Broncos history.
As the years march on, a lot of history gets paved over. So it's always, always important to be able to go back and get that perspective on where things started, where things evolved. So be sure to check out that book. And with that, we are going to close our first week edition of our podcast. Be sure to tune in next week for our week two. We will look back on week one, and we'll take a look forward to week two, which will be against the Kansas City Chiefs. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.